Hi everyone. As we wrap up with this year, it is my pleasure to be chatting today with Pia Maria Thurin and retrospecting on the Agile Manifesto on the 20th year anniversary of when the manifesto was written. Pia Maria is an Agile People coach, keynote speaker, and author of Agile People, A Radical Approach for HR and Managers, as well as the author for Agile People Principles, Your Call to Action for the Future of Work. Pia Maria started her career as a consultant in finance and tech and is now one of the pioneers of the Agile People movement. Inspired by the Agile Manifesto, she initiated the Agile People Manifesto and eventually started her own consulting firm, Agile People, which now has over 80 trainers around the world. We begin our conversation by talking about the origins of the Agile Manifesto and its intent. Pia Maria describes the impact it had on her work, as well as how you can start with the values and principles of the manifesto to go deeper and create something tangible for your own context. She then highlights the three steps: awareness, training, and coaching, to make sure that the values and principles are more applicable in any given context. Pia Maria shares success and failure stories from her experience of consulting with different organizations. And lastly, we touch on the importance of psychological safety and how to promote it within an organization, as well as why it's so important to work with the innovators in the company to help you convince the early adopters. Without further ado, please enjoy.
Hey, Pia Maria, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
Thank you so much, Raul. I'm fine, thank you. I'm in Stockholm today. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful day. So yes, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, great to hear. It's a pleasure to be chatting with you today and reflecting on the Agile Manifesto on its 20th year anniversary. And before we dive into the questions, I was wondering if you could help me set the stage and tell us a bit more about, firstly, what is the Agile Manifesto and how it came to be, as well as why does it exist in the first place?
Yeah, as you know, I created the Agile People Manifesto, which I think is much better. But yeah, we can go back to the Agile Manifesto and talk about that first, because obviously I was very influenced by the Agile Manifesto, which was created in Snowbird in Utah in 2001. And it was created by a bunch of, like you said, a bunch of white guys. They went there to ski, basically. And then they say, okay, we are going to talk about, they needed a reason really to meet. I heard this, the story from behind the scenes. And they needed a reason to meet. And they say, okay, we are going to talk about how we can improve organizations and how we can improve software development mainly. So that was the purpose of the meeting, as I have understood it. And they were mostly skiing, but they were doing a little bit of work and they finalized it afterwards. The Agile Manifesto is a reaction on the way that software development went on pretty much since the beginning of times, you could say, using the waterfall approach. So different kinds of organizations had been experimenting with lightweight development methods, you could say, DSDM and other methods. And now everybody who had been experimenting with this rapid application development, blah, blah, stuff that I worked with a long time ago as well, as I've been a consultant for almost 30 years now. So I was also there in this time before the Agile Manifesto, working with consulting, and we worked with Moskov prioritization, DSDM methods, and rapid application development. And then we went into rational unified process and different ways of working, because I work with IT consultancies and IT consulting projects like software development and implementation and configuration of different platforms, talent management platforms. And that's why I went into HR later. This meeting then became a reaction on all the difficulties, all the problems that these projects were experiencing. They were always late, they were always above budget, and a lot of problems with these projects, because software development is, of course, abstract. You cannot see it. So you need to work instead with a lot of prototyping, a lot of trial and error, experimentation, trying things, looking at where are we now, what is the next step. And you cannot really, you know, make a design and a fixed plan and move on like this, because the technological development is so quick. When you develop something, the customers have moved on and want something else in the end. That's the reason for the Agile Manifesto in the first place. And these are some simple principles, really, for how will we develop software and how will we work together doing that. And individuals in interactions over processes and tools is the first value in the Agile Manifesto. And you can find the Agile Manifesto on agilemanifesto.org and read more about that. It's not a lot, actually. It's four values and 12 principles. But from that sparked a lot of different things inspired by the Agile Manifesto. So I think the main purpose that the Agile Manifesto served is really to be the inspiration to a lot of people to do things along those lines, along those same lines, the same values, the same principles. So a lot of different groups and people and organizations have then continued to develop this, creating methods and models and practices, started to experiment. And it's also heavily influenced by Lean, by Beyond Budgeting, by William Edwards Deming and Peter Drucker and those early management thinkers, Douglas McGregor with his theory X and Y view of people. So a lot of old, so to speak, gurus have influenced the Agile Manifesto and the way it went along the same kind of values that these guys were talking about in organizations. And a lot of Lean also, I always say that Lean is a cousin of Agile. Mm. So it's about using people in a better way. It's about finding intrinsic motivation. It's about using the whole people, not just the bodies, but also the brains, and letting people think and decide for themselves where they are in the organization, because they are the experts, obviously, on what they are doing, since they are more close to the work than the managers or the engineers who work at the top of the companies. So it's about empowering people to take their own decisions and to take more responsibility and ownership for their work. In doing so, we need to make goals clear. We need to make simple rules clear. But then I always say, decide if you're a manager, decide the why, maybe the what, and leave the how to the people. And there are different levels of self-direction here. We talk about self-organizing, we talk about self-managing, and we talk about self-directing teams. So these are kind of different maturity stages, I would say. In most traditional organizations, there is very little self-organization. And in more modern organizations, people are used for even doing strategy work and deciding about everything in the company.
And the topic of self-direction and self-organization is definitely an interesting one. And for the listeners, this is also the topic for the next episode that we will be having on this podcast on the topic of self-organization. But Pia Maria, I want to go back to some of the things you touched on. You know, you were mentioning earlier, before the manifesto became publicized and became popularized, you were working as well with things like DSDM, with things like Lean and XP and so on. So I'm curious how this manifesto impacted your work or how you approached your work with organizations.
Actually, I was unaware of the Agile Manifesto at the time it was created. I just came back to that in 2009 when I realized that, wow, there is an Agile Manifesto. That's when I kind of found out about it. Before that, I didn't know about the Agile Manifesto. I just had worked with those other methods and models that I was mentioning, Lean and so on. And I say, okay, this is a wonderful people-focused way of approaching all those values that we've been experimenting a little bit with in the other frameworks that I had been working with. But I was not interested to use the Agile Manifesto for software development. I was interested instead to apply it to my HR projects and to leadership and to work with the people in the organization. So I applied the principles to HR and leadership instead, and looked at how will that look like, because the values and principles can be applied to anything.
Yeah, and if you look at the values themselves, right, there is a strong focus on the interactions with individuals, the focus on people over the work that you're doing. So how did that additional focus help you create the Agile People Manifesto? And what is that? Can you tell us a bit more about it?
Yes. So I had been working with Agile People for a number of years, since 2010, when we came up with the name Agile People. It was not a company at the time. I started the company in 2014, but it was an economic union, you could say. It was kind of a nonprofit organization until then, where we ran conferences and meetups and did network meetings together. Mm. So we did Agile People Sweden, was a conference that started in 2013. And we continued to kind of spread the thoughts and the beliefs that we had around how HR and managers should then apply these values and these principles. In 2019, rather, I was working with this Agile HR training since 2013. And with my HR projects that we had been implementing talent management systems, you know, the one size fits all approach, rolling out processes and systems all over the world, one size fits all, and nobody was happy with that. So the only people who were happy were the consultants, us. We were happy because we made a lot of money.
And it was easy to implement, right? Just roll it out in the company.
Yeah, yeah. But the customers were not that happy about the lack of value that was created for them. So I say there must be a better way to create more value. And it's instead about tailoring for unique local needs, right? Instead of doing a one-size-fits-all approach, rolling it out in the whole world, we need to listen to the people and their needs. And how do you work here? And how can we help you and support you at the local regional place instead? So I stopped to work with this kind of projects in 2014 and started only to focus on Agile HR and leadership. And I needed to have some course literature for my Agile HR course, and there was no literature in this topic. So I was thinking for many years, I need to write the book that would explain this, because I had been experimenting in large organizations with the mindset and the thinking, and what if we did like this instead, and what if we worked in different ways. And I had a lot of experience of doing that. So I said, I'm going to write about my experiences and what can we draw from that. So I wrote a book called Agile People, A Radical Approach for HR Managers That Leads to Motivated Employees. And I wrote this book in 2017. And that had quite a big effect, I think, because many people liked it. And many people told me that this is a great book, and this is the way we need to work for the future of work in organizations all over. And that kind of sparked something, and people started to ask me, can I do your training? Can I also teach what you are teaching? And that's when I started up my own training consultancy. And now I have around 80 trainers all across the globe who work with my concept. It's kind of a franchising concept, you could say. But we are doing a lot of development together. So I'm involving my trainers in new course development ventures where we cooperate and release together. We are doing certifications as well, because some companies think it's important.
Yeah, and that's a whole another topic by itself, right? Yeah, I think we could do another episode on that.
Yeah, we're getting to the Agile People Manifesto really soon here now, because in 2019, I say, okay, what if we would do this? Because I had been thinking about, I had been contributing to the Agile HR Manifesto. That was, I think, 2013. The Agile HR Manifesto came and I was contributing to that. And then I said, what about the Agile People Manifesto? Because it's similar to HR, but it's more, it's both leadership and HR and all the other people in the organization that needs to change. It's not just HR. It's not just management. It's all the people, including the teams, including the individuals, also need to change, right? People need to step up and take more responsibility and ownership and own their own learning, their own development, their own performance, and their own motivation and engagement. It's not somebody else who is going to do that to you, as a manager could motivate or engage or teach you something, because you can't. You can only teach yourself. You can only motivate yourself. But managers can create the conditions, and HR and managers can create the conditions where we can feel that I have the possibility to learn, I have the possibility to develop and grow, I have the possibility to make my own decisions, to perform, to be happy, and to feel motivation and engagement. And that's exactly what we are talking about. Care for the people, but manage the system, right? So we care for our people, we put humans first, but we manage the system so that it's possible for people to do all these things. Because that's when we get happy customers, create a lot of customer value, create profitable organizations, and everybody's happy. Stakeholders are happy as well. So the value creation process between employees and customers need to be more in the center than the shareholder value, because we can't start from the finances. We can't start from the result. We need to start from the value creation between customers and employees. And the shareholder value and the results and the profit is a consequence of that value creation, right? So if we create value, we will be profitable. That's sure. the kind of thinking that we have. And most of the time, companies are doing it the other way around, which is then backwards thinking in my mind, in my head. They start from, we are going to create this much sales, for example, and this number, and then you break it down and it's not inspiring and it's not fun, and I don't feel motivated to perform towards that. And then we are bribing people because they don't feel motivated to perform. We are paying them bonuses because I don't believe that you will be motivated unless I pay you a fat bonus. And that's kind of degrading people. You're a good person and we hired you, but we don't believe you will be motivated unless we pay you a fat bonus.
Right.
That's what you're saying when you do that, right?
Yeah. And from a product perspective as well, it's the opposite approach, right? Rather than saying this is the amount of money we want to make, or this is the solution that we're proposing, right? Nowadays, it's so important to focus first and foremost on the problems that you're trying to solve for your customers, for your users, and then leveraging the values and the principles to create a culture of coherence so that the people are enabled to help you reach that, right? So that they share the same values and the same principles as everyone else within the company.
Yeah. And you need to be able to link a person's individual values and passions and interests and skills to the needs of the organization. And this linking can be coached by leaders, for example, or by HR. And this is what we use leaders and HR for. The future role for them is to be an agile people coach. So that's the new role that I see emerging here. But back to the Agile People Manifesto, this group of people who were very engaged and were doing my training, I saw that we have a potential to do something similar than the Agile Manifesto, but now we are not going to focus on software development. We are going to focus on the people of the organization. So that's why we created the Agile People Manifesto. And we actually did it together. We came together in 2019 in June in my summer house on the west coast of Sweden. We were 19 persons from 15 different countries and all parts of the world. Very beautiful, colorful bunch of people. And we spent 4 days together in Smögen, on the west coast of Sweden, where we cooked, laughed, argued, did good stuff, had conflicts, had a great time. And we had some work left to do, but we had an embryo to the Agile People Manifesto ready from those 4 days. And then we finalized in 2 meetings during the rest of the summer. And now it's available on agilepeoplemanifesto.org.
Yeah, thanks. I will definitely link that in the show notes for people to look into as well.
And there is a little movie also that you can view how it looked like when we met and how we cooked together and the nice conversations we had. And it's all playful because everybody was an agile coach or consultant. around them were very much, and still those things happen that always happens in groups, right? It's fantastic in the beginning. Wow, we are great. This is fantastic. And then the second and third day, we went into down to some kind of, you know, group process where we had more calm. And then we came up from that again at the end. And we split as fantastic friends for life, I would say.
That's great to hear. And I think your answer also highlights the wide-scaled application that you have with something like the Agile Manifesto, right? Something that started off for software development, primarily in consulting companies, and that has now progressed to different HR communities, people communities, non-product and tech areas as well. And what I wanted to dig in deeper was when you were writing this with the other consultants in your field, you mentioned there were people from so many different countries, right? And like you brought up at the beginning, when you look at the contributors for the Agile Manifesto, you realize that they're all older white males. So does this have some sort of potential for creating misrepresentation of the values and principles, especially now that the applications are so far and beyond the specific industry?
Well, you can question that. I think the values are still good, although the creators were mainly white middle-aged men. The values are still good to start from, but I think you need to deepen them a little bit more and make them more. I think today, if you read the values, it's kind of obvious that this is the case. It's not any news anymore. If you see what I mean, it's no news. You need to go deeper than that today because it's 20 years ago and things have moved on since then. So I think that maybe with more diversity, like we did it, it's a better way. But we can learn from what they did, obviously. I think the best knowledge and the best development of knowledge is when you build on what other people have already done and you continue to develop that. That's how research is done.
Standing on the shoulder of giants, right?
Exactly. So you build on something else and then you kind of take it a step further. Sometimes people say to me, because we have 34 principles in Agile People, they say, but this is not part of the Agile Manifesto. No, it's not. It's part of Agile People Manifesto and the Agile People principles. It's not the same. It has moved on and we have more principles and we have different principles than the Agile Manifesto had. But people kind of suppose that just because we call it Agile, everything has to kind of be derived back to the Agile Manifesto, which is not the case because we have different flavors now and things are developing all the time.
Yeah, and when you were creating this Agile People Manifesto, which aspects of the Agile Manifesto resonated the most with you and your group?
Definitely individuals and interactions over processes and tools. We started from. So how do we deepen this one? How do we work with psychological safety and trust and transparency and visualization and all these principles that we believe that you need to increase all the time in the organization, any kind of organization, you need to increase the Agile People principles. And that's what we built all our trainings on, all our sessions on, to understand how to increase the principles, what tools can we use, what methods, models, what mindset is needed, what are the practices and frameworks that we can be inspired by. But there is no recipe for success. There is no silver bullet. The only thing we can do is experimenting and find the best way for our company, our organization.
I want to dig into the concept of applicability a little bit, because like you said, it needs to be contextualized for your given organization or your given team. So it's all well and said, if you have this manifesto and people know about it, they understand that it's important to follow. We potentially give other clients trainings about it, but then how is it really used day to day, or is it at all by the teams, by the people who are doing the work? Is this something that people look at maybe once during a training and then forget about it during the rest of their careers? Or how do you make sure, you know, that this is something that people truly live in their day-to-day work?
We work with a three-step process here. Sounds familiar. Awareness is the first step. It's to understanding why is this important, to understanding how the world is changing. And with COVID, it has just speeded up. It's a lot easier now than before COVID, because everybody understands that the people who made a budget on the autumn of 2019 were very surprised when it happened in March.
Yeah.
And the budget was obviously not valid anymore, and you needed to kind of change everything. Mm-hmm. And there are new ways of working, new goals, new strategies that were needed.
And this awareness, is that on the context you're in, or what sort of awareness is it for?
Awareness about what is happening in the world, what is happening to organizations, what is happening to the economic climate, the global mm-hmm. climate. The globalization, the technical development, the sharing economy, everything that is happening in our world, create that awareness now, given those new circumstances that didn't exist before and that is all the time developing moving forward. How can we then be successful when running our organizations? And what is it we need to change to understand how to be successful? Because this is a complex reality that has not existed before to that extent, and complexity is increasing exponentially all the time. And how you work in a complex reality is not the same as when you work in a complicated reality like Ford did in his time, and the big companies from the 40s, 50s and 60s. Mm. And it's totally different way of working. But management, the way it was performed, and organizational development, the way it was performed, has lived on, very much carried by the big consultancies.
We often have these vestiges as well, right? The way we plan, the way we do budgeting, like you were saying as well, right? The way we do the work, assign work or give yes. work to people.
It's top down, it's hierarchical. It's not the way that we should do it to be successful in a complex reality. Instead, we need to turn to complexity theory and look at complexity theory and frameworks like Kinevin and other similar ways of thinking. Here we can find some clues of, okay, we are here now. And we can apply Kinevin to, for example, the pandemic and see that we were in chaos, we moved it to complexity, then we moved it to the complicated domain, and probably we will go back into complexity and we'll need to start experimenting and using trial and error again. We cannot really know what to do when we end up in this kind of situation that we were in March 2020. And thinking that we can know what to do, like closing down countries, etc., it's only stupid to think that yeah. we have the solution here. We lock down and we let nobody go outside. This is craziness. And we in Sweden, we understood that from the beginning. So, no, just kidding. But we had a clue that this is not over yet. It will go on for a long time. And today we are not among the top dead people anymore in our country, but we are number 35 or something and dropping in our country. And we were free all the time to do whatever. We never wore yep. any face masks or did any lockdown at all. Now, when you look at the figures, we are really in a very good place.
I think that's a very apt metaphor, right? The analogy of COVID to the complexity that exists inside organizations where things move in unpredictable ways, market changes, market shifts, but also your users' problems, their demands, their needs also shift. And if you're not constantly assessing that, or if you're not aware of that, or if you don't have a system in place that makes you aware of it constantly, you're in trouble, right? As a company, as a team, as a country.
Yeah. So after awareness is training. Okay, you're aware. I understand now that we need to do in a different way. But how? And what is this agile thing? If I'm a manager in a traditional organization today, I'm only feeling threatened about this agile transformation, because mm-hmm. what will become of me when all this agility happens? What will become of me when everybody seems to be able to manage themselves and don't need to be managed anymore? They don't need to be put in a 9-box grid linked to a salary box to get their bonuses And it's a totally new reality. And of course, it's extremely threatening to management, this situation. So how can we help managers to understand what is the new role that they need to take? A servant, coaching, transformational, agile leader role. This is what is needed for the future of work, the agile people coach that we call it.
And those skills are often very different, right? Traditional management, and not a lot of people are able to transfer that into what is required to manage, to coach, to lead teams nowadays.
Exactly. So the traditional status and power that used to be the kind of traits of leaders and were successful traits in the old days, they are no longer successful traits. It's totally different skills, different personality traits, and it's hard to change personality. Let's conclude that. It's hard for a person to suddenly walking in these shoes, being a successful leader for 30 years, just swiftly change to being a servant coaching leader who works with people first and whose main role is to support other people to develop and grow and be their best selves, right? So enabling performance instead of managing performance. That's a huge shift for management. And I think this is what we see coming more than HR, but HR needs to be there as well, but they need to work together. So that's why we are targeting HR and management, because they are the influencers in any organizations. They are the people who really need to move first. They need to go first and show the way for everybody else. And other people also need to change. Of course, all employees, all teams need to change as well. But they are the influencers. If they don't move, nobody can move. If managers and HR don't move, then nobody can move. They need to change the structures, create prerequisites and conditions for a great culture. And in that culture, in that soil, people can start growing. And then we can see that we have a chance at least to reach our full potential as an organizational system, as a garden where the people are the plants and the gardener is the leader. And that's a very nice metaphor that I like a lot.
So we've got awareness, we've got training. What's the third piece?
The third piece is coaching/consulting, because it's not enough to do training. It's not enough to understand, okay, now I realize there are OKRs, there is Scrum, I have this mindfulness training, I need to know about biases, I need to understand breathing techniques, I need to understand mind traps. I need to understand how my brain works, neuroleadership, diversity, psychological safety, conflict coaching, all these things. You need to understand a totally new set of skills and tools if you're a leader. And it's not enough just to understand, to get the training, then you need to start doing it. And to do that, you need coaching. You need somebody who will help you to think when you are there in this exact particular situation. When you're there, then I need somebody who I can talk to, who understand what are my challenges and who knows. Okay, maybe there is a special tool you could use or a practice. You can try this. What can I experiment with? Yeah, you can experiment with this and this and this and this. Or ask the questions that I need to really understand and learn and myself find the answer to the questions that, that I ask myself. So coaching, consulting is the third step. So awareness, training, coaching, consulting.
Yeah, I think those three steps or those three aspects have the ability to make the applicability a little more useful, right? For fitted for today's day and age and how organizations would then take something so esoteric, like a collection of values and principles, and apply it to their day-to-day work. I want to ask you, what are some frequent questions that you get from people who you work with about the values and principles themselves, and how do you answer them?
People ask me, but how can we increase those principles? If I'm a manager today, what should I? And often they come with a specific problem in a specific situation and ask, how shall I solve this? Expecting a recipe in return. And this is exactly not how it works, because you need to start experimenting. You need to try different things. You can get a toolbox from me, but I cannot say what would work in your organization. If I work with you for some time, I will have a better clue around what could work. But if that doesn't work, you need to try something else. Mm-hmm. And this is what people have a difficulty understanding, that there are no frameworks that always work. There is no clear path to success, because this is what the big consultancy firms have always been telling managers. Just do as we say and you will be successful. Just implement this business process reengineering.
Yeah, because Google is doing it, right? Or Facebook's adding this, or Netflix is doing this.
Because somebody else is already doing it. And we implement change. No, we don't. We don't implement change. We continuously learn and improve. That's the way to change. You can continuously learn and improve. It's a learning journey. It's not a transformation. It's not a transition. It's not a project. And it's not an implementation. It's just a learning journey. And you can speed it up by more people who believe what you believe. That's the only way to speed it up. Having more people who believe what you believe. If you have more than 50% in theory of people who believe what you believe, then the change will happen by itself. You don't have to do anything.
How do you get clear on that? The beliefs, the values within the organization? Because I have a feeling the answer is not as simple as just coming up with them and posting them around the building, around the campus.
No. It's about a mindset shift. And leaders need to go first. Leaders need to show vulnerability and tell people that they make mistakes, ask a lot of questions to get help from their teams to think. If they start showing vulnerability, people will feel safe to make mistakes. And when they feel safe to make mistakes, they will learn from those mistakes. So psychological safety, again, is the most important platform for this to happen. How do you create psychological safety? Well, you start talking about it. You start the conversations and the dialogues in the organization about what is making me feel insecure. We have a game called the psychological safety game, which is great to play at the end of every sprint, for example, in the retrospective. You can play the psychological safety game. You can talk about difficult things. Where did I not feel safe? How can we improve that? What can our manager do? What can we do? And then we measure again after the next sprint. Maybe you bring up three things that somebody felt, and then you work with them in the coming sprint. So all the time, continuously improve, continuously opening up, more transparency, more trust. This is the way you change. And you work with your innovators. You bring your innovators close to you. You spread them out then in the organization as much as possible, and they will do their magic where they are, your champions, your innovators. And then they will convince the early adopters, and then you reach the early majority. And when you have the early majority, you will move on the top of this
market adoption curve.
The laggards will never move. So don't waste any time trying to convince laggards. Don't waste your time and energy. Focus on the believers. Focus on the people who are already there, who already believe, and try to hire more of these people into your organization and try to get rid of the others who don't believe. However you now do that.
Easier said than done.
Yes.
Thank you. And as we come to the bottom end of this episode, I have a few last questions that I'd like to ask you on this topic. Do you have any tips for people working in the Agile space as to how they can leverage something so vague, like a collection of values and principles, into their day-to-day work, right? Is it through using those three steps that we talked about earlier, the awareness, the training, and the coaching, or is there something additional that you would maybe include in there?
Be the change you want to see in others. That's my best advice. Live the values yourself. That's all you can do. You will affect your immediate surroundings. You have a span of a group of people around you that you can affect. but you cannot do more. And if you think that the change is going too slow for you, I would recommend you to change organization, because it will not be fast. If you're an old-fashioned traditional organization, it will not be fast. But what you can do is to be the change, educate yourself, ask the right questions, because any organization develops in the direction that we ask the questions. So learning how to form powerful, challenging questions is a fantastic skill. And what else is a fantastic question. And what else, the all question, great coaching question. And then you make people think again.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Maria, I think this would be a great place to start wrapping up. Do you have any parting comments for the audience members, the people listening to this episode of the Agile Manifesto, the values and principles?
Well, start where you are. Be the change. And the sooner you start trying to increase the Agile People principles, the sooner you will reap the benefits from happy performing people working towards a common vision. Everybody can do something. It spreads like tea in a teapot. I like this metaphor a lot. It's a question of the amount of tea versus water in a teapot. How quickly does that? It's like a virus, even though I don't want to talk about virus.
It's too soon, right? I haven't heard the tea in a teapot analogy before. I think that's a great one and very appropriate, right? The sense of diffusing and influencing through who you're touching and through who you're in contact with, rather than trying to influence everyone at once.
Yes. The stronger you want the tea, the more tea you need to put into the water, right? So the tea being the people who are already convinced.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for sharing these insights. Where can people connect with you? Do you have a Twitter, a website that people can reach out to?
Either agilepeople.com. LinkedIn is always good to find me. You can ask me anything on LinkedIn. I talk a lot with people through private messaging, direct messaging on LinkedIn. Agilepeople.com, obviously, is our official website. And then also piamariatorian.com is my kind of private website as well.
Pia Maria, thank you so much once again for having this conversation with me about the Agile Manifesto on its 20th anniversary, about where it comes from, how it's used, and as well, what it's evolving into as we go forward. So thanks so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge, your tips, and your stories with me.
Thank you so much, Raul. It was a pleasure. Wish you a great day.
Hey guys, it's your host, Raul again. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and subscribe to Agile Atelier Podcast on your podcast app and share this episode with your friends. You can also tweet to us at Agile Atelier. For previous episodes, please visit agile-atelier.com. Until next time.